two big games in the East in the Big Ten this upcoming weekend. Unbeaten's Michigan and Michigan State. You got Ohio State and Penn State. You got Georgia and Florida. Texas and Baylor. Ole Miss and Auburn this weekend as well. Iowa, Wisconsin. Miami and Pitt. The U is back against Kenny Pickett. And Pat Narduzzi, who's got a top 10 offense, a top 10 red zone defense, and third down defense, and probably is going to get some attention for jobs that are open. Texas Tech opened up today. Matt Wells, 13-17 in 3 years. They're 5-3 this year. He is out. Justin Fuente at Virginia Tech. Sounds like we are getting towards the end of his stay in Blacksburg. You already know LSU and USC are open. Mike Schaefer joins us now. Do you expect this to be a start to become a really interesting, silly season? That there may be jobs that open up that we don't expect?
Yeah, I do think there's going to be a lot of movement this season. I also just sort of think we're headed to that cycle, right? Like, Matt Wells is on his third season. That's no longer good enough for Texas Tech, a place that hasn't fielded a consistent winner since they chased out Mike Leach. So I just think that we're likely to kind of get into this churn of everybody searching for the magic elixir. And I think part of what makes this difficult is it's much harder right now in 2021 to be a consistent winning football program than it was 15 years ago. And then there's more attention to it. There's more money on it. And so therefore there's more expectations. And you look at a guy like Justin Fuente, who was, I think, as you well know, was Nebraska's alternative to Scott Frost.
Yep.
Like, that was the guy that would have been in the big chair at Nebraska had Scott Frost not taken the job. And now he's going to be out of a job at Virginia Tech. And it's not like he's done poorly there. He just isn't Frank Beamer. And they're just not going to consistently challenge for an ACC title. And that's just the reality of where I think college football kind of finds itself. The thing that always fascinates me, especially when you kind of get into this, there are a lot of coaches out there. And of course, you know, with Nebraska and Scott Frost being where they are, this conversation has certainly popped up around here, where if Nebraska moves on from them, like, who can they go get? You don't have to go down that many names before it starts to feel like, really, is this the guy in a situation that's going to go get a raise? I mean, so it's Pat Narduzzi is a great example. I heard you mention him just a minute or so ago. Like, he's probably going to go make some money somewhere. But prior to this year, were any of us talking about Pitt for anything other than random wins against Clemson and inexplicable losses otherwise?
Nope. And since 2015, there's only two coaches that have two wins or more against Clemson, Nick Saban and now Narduzzi. I wonder, As athletic directors look at college football this year, if they factor in that this is a really wonky year with the extra year of eligibility and how much of an impact it has made in kind of the parity that we're seeing in college football, if this is just a one-off, or if you're looking at your program that you're in charge of going, uh-oh, we're going down the wrong path. Because I wonder, Clemson is going to be an interesting case study right now. It's hard to stay on top. And Clemson has had, maybe we should have seen this coming, because they have struggled running the ball, offensive line, even at the tail end of Trevor Lawrence's stay. And Clemson doesn't look anything like we thought they would look like. They've had bad quarterback play. Again, they've had real porous offensive line. They can't score. That defense still is one of the best in the country. What do you think? Where do you think Clemson is headed?
Yeah, sort of fascinating, because Clemson kind of feels like they have experienced the highs of seven straight years of having the best quarterback or one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Maybe it's seven, maybe it's six, but somewhere in that run. I mean, I know that there was the 1 year where they had the other guy, Kelly something, that the
Kelly
sort
Bryant
of bridged the gap between Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, but largely they've just kind of been able to sort of enjoy the fruits of having an elite college football quarterback. And those talents are more rare than I think we probably realize. more guys are likely to just kind of be just a guy, and that might be where they find themselves right now with someone that was very highly rated in DJ Ungulale. I gave it my best effort. We'll give it a C-. But, you know, so they're in a weird spot. They get a ton of talent. They recruit really well. I would not write off Clemson at this point. This feels more like an aberration year than it does sort of the start of something. But it does kind of change the conversation about, well, instead of Dabo Swinney being the heir apparent to Nick Saban, maybe we have to see what Dabo Swinney's like when he doesn't have one of the three best college football quarterbacks. I mean, it changes the way you feel about a program a little bit. And that's what makes Nick Saban so special. They have to reload every year. And yet, even in years where it's like, I don't think this is a great Alabama team, but they're still really good.
Yes. It's October 25th, and the Big Ten East is getting all the headlines, and they've got marquee games upcoming. The Big Ten West is just kind of flying under the radar. Wisconsin-Iowa is a big game this weekend. It may not be the most appeasing because the total is like 36.5. It'll feel like Iowa-Wisconsin. But does it feel like on October 25th that Wisconsin's going to win the West again, and we're going to, on Thanksgiving weekend, go, how did they do it with that?
I don't know that I'm ready to go there yet. They've still got a – I think Minnesota, the team that Nebraska most recently played, has a fair chance at this. I thought they looked pretty good in a follow-up to that Nebraska game against the Maryland team. That's not great, but it's not – you know, it's not particularly a bad program. It's just sort of a team you got to watch yourself against. And it's a team that beat Minnesota the previous year, I'm pretty sure. And so then – you know, they get a nice win there. They're going to get an opportunity against Northwestern and then Illinois. And then they're going to play both Wisconsin and Iowa in the month of November. I mean, I think that everyone saw what Wisconsin did to Purdue, and they kind of ignore that they didn't play that well against Army the week before. They didn't play that well against Illinois the week before. Yes, they put some wins on the board, but I don't know why they would necessarily be a favorite against Iowa. I mean, I think that these are pretty comparable teams, and I still think they have a lot of issues with Graham Mertz. I mean, you can win a game against Purdue where he barely has to throw the ball. I don't think you're going to have that against every other team you play going forward. So at some point, Graham Mertz has to be an asset, not something you're trying to hide. And I know we've talked about Wisconsin quarterbacks like that in the past, but the level of play they've gotten from him versus even an Alex Hornibrook is stunningly bad.
Iowa and Wisconsin in 2015. Iowa went to Madison and upset a ranked Wisconsin team 10-6. The total is 36.5, and it's even a point less than Wisconsin Army finished at. That shows you that this is this has the makings of maybe not 10-6, but it's going to be one of those very unappealing watching on TV games. But I don't know. There's just something about Wisconsin. I still think Ohio State and Iowa play in Indy, but Wisconsin is running the ball, and maybe they've given up on Mertz where they're okay with a game where they run it 51 times and he only throws it 8, and they say, defense, continue to do what you do, and that is give up less than 4 yards per play.
Yeah. I'm really curious because I think it's a matchup where I don't know that I would feel great if I was either team about their quarterback, but I do think that Graham Mertz versus Iowa's defense, like if he has to throw, and as opportunistic as that Iowa team is, that's just a recipe for disaster. I mean, I don't put a lot of stock in the 2020 season, but Iowa made him look really bad. I don't know if you remember that game last year.
It blew him out.
They were able to get just enough big plays, and he really couldn't move out of the shadow of his own end zone.
Mike Schaefer from Husker 24/7 joining us. All right, now let's talk about the team that you've been hanging around today with. Do we expect anything new on Saturday? A look, a player, an emotion? Are you expecting anything different?
I don't think so, at least not based on the couple players that were out in the hallway and then the snippets that I've read of guys that talked and then Scott Frost. I mean, I think that's sort of the thing, one way or the other, good or bad. The Nebraska team that you saw go into the Minnesota game and lose is still the Nebraska team you're getting after a bye week. I don't think there's any big wholesale change left for them. I think the big switch was Teddy Prochazka at left tackle, and that's been taken away from him cruelly, if you will, with that knee injury. And I just don't think there's anything else coming. They kind of are who they are. I don't think there's any new wrinkle that you're going to see offensively. They're going to try to build off of their running game and the play action, and maybe there's an emphasis on more Austin Allen and Travis Mokolek, but that might just be wishful thinking on my part. But I just kind of think this is the Nebraska team that you're going to get. And I don't know that they're going to approach this Purdue game all that different than they have approached every other game this season, which six times they've gone out and they've played well and have had, you know, 3-3 in those results. And the other two times they showed up slow to start and the defense wasn't quite up to its usual standard and it sunk. We'll see which version they get on Saturday against Purdue. But I suspect it'll be more like one of the other six. I mean, Nebraska has done a nice job most of this year flushing games and then coming back and meeting the standard of which they want to play at. I think they'll do that with Purdue. I think it'll look better for people. I think Nebraska will likely leave with a win, but I don't think it's going to look all that different than the team that played against Michigan or played against Michigan State or Northwestern or anything else you saw earlier this month or in the last 6 weeks.
Outside of winning three games and becoming bowl eligible and Tommy Armstrong and Jordan Westerkamp will be erased by Adrian Martinez and Samori Toure. That's the last time Nebraska went to a bowl game. Thank you, Adam. What else do you need to see outside of three wins to become bowl eligible that might inspire confidence or create confidence that could be a selling point to next year?
Well, I'd like to see the offense get a little bit more involved with some of the younger pass catchers. I mean, and by that, obviously, Xavier Betts is one of those names, but also guys like Alante Brown and Will Nixon, whose names have not really been called since the first two games of the year. I would like to see a little bit more from those players. And quite frankly, and this goes into all sorts of different topics, I would love to see aggressive Adrian Martinez. Yeah. We get very few flashes of him throughout a season. And there are times where he seems very aggressive and Nebraska seems very aggressive on offense. And then there's other times where it seems like they're incredibly passive, that they're concerned about, you know, potential for turnover, that they just kind of want to sort of work their way into the end zone and not go out and take it. And I would love to see a more aggressive mentality from the offense and from Adrian Martinez. I mean, I felt like they needed to take more deep shots against Minnesota to take advantage of a secondary that I didn't think was as good as their wide receivers. And they really only had that one deep pass to Levi Fowle, who was open. Adrian just couldn't hit him. So I would like to see a more aggressive mentality with four games left. I don't feel super confident we're going to get that.
We talk a lot about Xavier Betts. If you're trying to create confidence and start to plan for 2022 with skill guys, I may have asked you this last week, but the stark reality is when he touches the ball, usually big things happen. We know why he doesn't get the opportunity to touch the ball as much, but you're down to your last four games and you have to find a way to win three. Still have any feel for what his roadmap looks like in these last four games?
I mean, I think the roadmap has been pretty consistent. Show up Monday through Friday and work as hard as you work on Saturday. Give people confidence that you know the game plan and you know what's going to be expected of you. And then go out and play the plays as you know how to do on Saturday. I mean, I don't think there's anything magical about what they want from them. And look, maybe one of the wrinkles is going to be they're going to have more gadget plays for Xavier Betts, and they're going to have more behind the line of scrimmage plays, or they're going to have like specific formation or two in which he's in a key role. But I don't know that that's super helpful either, because I think for confidence to be grown in this offense and for him specifically, you need him to do it as just a traditional wide receiver. And maybe this is a week where you get to do that a little bit more. I mean, you get to play him a little bit more, or you try to play him a little bit more. I don't know. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about stuff that we don't necessarily have the greatest view on. And of course we all talk with different people who know Xavier or know sort of what's happening over there, or have a feel for the wide receiver room. But I just feel like they have to kind of just let him sink or swim. And it's something the staff hasn't been really good about. They don't like to put a guy out there unless they feel more comfortable with him. I know that that dramatically can impact the way an offense is run too. So it's not like it's just one guy who's going to affect the other 10 on the field. But I would like to see a little bit more playing time for him and see if he's able to earn that trust that he needs to in order to continue to grow, because 15 plays and five of which are more gadget style plays a game isn't exactly the recipe to turn a guy that has all the tools to be a top receiver into someone that you can really count on in future seasons.
Who's Nebraska more concerned about, David Bell or Karlaftis?
That's a good question. I'm going to say Karlaftis. I think Karlaftis can affect Nebraska more than David Bell can, because I think Nebraska can shift coverage to David Bell. I think Nebraska can get after Aiden O'Connell a little bit. I think Nebraska can cause some issues for Purdue's offensive line. And even if David Bell goes and has 100-some yards, I would expect Nebraska is going to be able to corral him enough that it's not like a 3-touchdown performance. Karlaftis could disrupt every play of yours on offense if you don't have any way of slowing him down. I mean, he can ruin your zone reads. He can ruin your passing attempts. He can take away a whole half of the field because he's just getting upfield so quickly that there's not a lot that you can do against it. I feel like he's the more dangerous of the two players, and he's the one that is going to be more disruptive on Saturday. So that's where I'm probably going with that.
What do you think happens Saturday?
Wish I knew. Let's see. The last time I had to predict one of these involving Nebraska, I felt like they were going to be able to show up, take care of business, and take a Minnesota team that had some weaknesses and work it against them. They did none of those things. And here against Purdue, I see a team that, quite frankly, they don't have a quarterback. I don't think that highly of Aiden O'Connell. I think Nebraska's defense, the last time these teams played, they were able to really slow down that passing attack, which also featured Rondale Moore that day. They were able to get some sacks. They got some pressure. They got big plays and special teams with a block punt. They played really well against Purdue. I think there's some confidence that they match up well in this game. And I would look for them to come out and be able to put, you know, 20-some points on the board. The question is, are they going to be able to keep enough off, and is the offense going to avoid the big sort of bugaboo? And I think they will. I think Nebraska wins. I think the spread's too high, but I don't know. Right now, I would lean towards like a 24-20 type game. And I don't have the most confidence in it, but I do think Nebraska will play better than how some might anticipate following that Minnesota loss.
All right, we'll get chatter on this. When do you think, or will there be a feedback from Nebraska being aggressive on the road at the tail end of this week, but also being aggressive with offers for junior college players? When do you think we will see a result of that, if at all?
Probably more November, December. I look at a guy like Keontae Scott, who just released the top 12 from Snow College. You still got to get these guys on campus, and I haven't really seen any junior college players appear yet on any visit list. I know there's a Zaquan Frazier from Coffeyville that they liked, that they would have liked to have gotten out here, but that didn't happen. So I think that, you know, with the junior college guys and the transfer portal guys, we're still a little ways away from that. But they should have an official visitor this weekend in Jaleel Martin, the defensive back out of Chicago. And he's someone that they have a chance of getting, so keep an eye on him.
All right, Chafe, thank you. We'll see you this weekend.
All right, that's good, Gary. Have a good week.
That's Mike Schaefer from Huskers 24/7. Back-to-back weekends where the Ohio State game being at 11 a.m. would not be great to get people here, especially after Fridays. And you also have to remember, if you're getting junior college players, they're playing on Saturday. So that's not going to happen, and you have just three home games remaining. All right, 121. We're following Matt Wells being out at Texas Tech. So he's in his third year. They started 3-0, but they gave up 70 to Texas, 52 to TCU, and they were up by 14 at halftime against Kansas State. Now they have Oklahoma, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and Baylor on the schedule. And instead of allowing Matt Wells to save his job, they have fired their head football coach at Texas Tech after only 3 years, 13-17 overall, 7-16, 5-3 this season. I don't think they will have to look very far. Just go to Texas San Antonio or Jeff Traylor. The Roadrunners are 8-0, and they are ranked number 25. And he's a former high school head coach in the state of Texas, so he's got connections all over the place. And he worked in the Big 12. He worked for Sonny Dykes, who is the son of the late Spike Dykes, who was the longtime legend at Texas Tech as their head coach. There is some talk, just following writers that are tweeting about Texas Tech. Could Texas Tech look at Art Briles? Would they touch Art Briles in a place like Lubbock? Remember, they haven't been afraid to go there with controversial figures. Remember, Bobby Knight was the head coach. Mike Leach was their head football coach. But they got rid of their head football coach. And essentially, reading between the lines of a statement, they said, we're not going to let the coach try and save his job by beating Oklahoma, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, or Baylor to get to bowl eligibility. We're ready to move on now and to get into the cycle to get our coach before somebody else does. It's the end of October. I think this is going to happen a little bit quicker. Instead of letting coaches finish the year, athletic directors that want to make a move because they want their guy or they have their guy, they're not going to waste any time. All right, 123. When we come back, a couple of other things out of the weekend of college football. One, remember name, image, likeness? Now that we're into the season, we don't talk about it as much. There's still name, image, likeness deals going down. But what about the big profile name, image, likeness deals that happen in July? Remember those names? There are some of those names in college football that are not starting right now. So what happened? And also we have to discuss maybe the worst call in the history of college football that happened in Ames, Iowa, in the Iowa State-Oklahoma State game. It has nothing to do with spotting the football. It has to do with a 15-yard penalty and taunting somebody with your eyes. See that, Josh? That's 15 yards right there.
That's first personal foul of the day for you.
We're back with more of the Gary Sharp Show after this.